Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to Night and Day, the Tom Jennings Audio Archive.
Welcome to the third installment of Night and Day, the Tom Jennings Audio Archive. My name is Tom Jennings, a music writer for the Niagara Gazette in Niagara Falls, New York. And this third installment features a musician that I absolutely love, John Wetton. John is perhaps best known as the lead singer and bassist in Asia. He did so much more. He was a prolific solo artist. He did stints in King Crimson, taking over for Greg Lake and really putting the band back on the map after Lake left after that first album. He formed the supergroup UK, which progressive rock fans absolutely love UK. And of course, Uriah Heep and just Roxy Music. I could just go on and on and on with different bands that he was in addition to his solo work. Well, this interview was conducted when John was coming to the Rapids Theater for a show with Asia. It was not long after Steve Howe had departed, and they had just come out with an album called Gravitas with new guitarist Sam Colson. And after we had the interview, they were kind enough to set me up with a meet and greet with the band. So I was able to meet them and kind of hang out and chat with John in person as well. Just a splendid guy. A lot of musical knowledge, of course, but very, very humble. I hope you enjoy this interview as much as I did. Asia was a important part of my life. I saw them on one of their very first shows in Rochester, New York back in 1981, and who can forget that iconic first album cover? And then was able to catch them again on what would wind up being their final tour with Steve Howe for decades at the Rochester War Memorial in support of their second album, Alpha. And it would be years until the group would get back together, Steve Howe again. They put out some great music in the 2000s, when the original got back to, and that Gravitas album is a fantastic album as well. Anyhow, John and I touch on a bunch of subjects. I had a lot of questions from back in the day when I grew up listening to Asia. He was a very gracious interview subject, as I'm sure you will hear. And he was over in England, and I was sitting in my mother's living room, actually at her dining room table. So without further ado, I hope you enjoy this. John Wetton.
Hello.
Hello, is this John Wetton?
Yeah, this is Tom.
This is Tom.
Okay, Tom.
Wow. Good. What an honor. I've got to say I've been a fan of Crimson, Asia, UK, everything you've done. This is a real honor and pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
If we could start with the present and maybe move backwards just a little bit.
Yeah.
We'll start with the new album, Gravitas. First of all, I guess it originally was supposed to come out with the name Valkyrie, which is the lead song on the album. What made you guys change the name from Valkyrie to Gravitas?
Yeah, for me, I mean, one of my jobs is to come up with the titles, really, you know. So I was in a bit of a spot when Steve Howe announced that he was leaving, which is now nearly 2 years ago. He said he was leaving because he couldn't do both jobs. He couldn't do Yes and Asia, and he wanted to concentrate on Yes. Well, it's his first love, I understand that. And I'm not ever going to say anything against Steve. He's been a fantastic member of this band for a long, long time. But he put us in a spot whereby we were halfway through a tour. We were just about to do a live recording in San Francisco, and he was about to announce that he would be leaving the band. So in order to counter that, we had to have something to say about it. First of all, we had to decide that the band was going to continue, which we did. We then had to find another guitar player. We had to make sure that our record company was behind us and management was behind us. And we had just got the news that we landed a festival in Sweden, which we'd wanted to play for a long, long time, which was called Sweden Rock. So I said to management, well, look, put this announcement out that we will be playing Sweden Rock. We'll have a new album. At that point, Valkyrie was just a title and like four chords in my head at that time. But I kind of thought that it was going to be a bit of a concept. So Carl and I then put our heads together and we looked We had a short list of guitar players, a short list of two. One was Steve Lukather, who I've known for a long time, and he has some kind of connection with the band that he played on Days Like These, which was about 20 years ago. We had a single called Days Like These, which Steve Lukather played guitar on. We had the other favorite was Paul, this is Carl's favorite guy.
Paul Gilbert.
From Mr. Big, Paul Gilbert, yep. Correct, yes. I didn't know him as well as I knew Steve. We approached both of these guys, and both of them gave the same answer. They said, love to, darling, but can't. And so when Paul Gilbert said this, we said, well, if you can't, do you know someone who can? Because by this time, we'd sort of run out of ideas. And he said, yes, I do. I know two people. In fact, I know two people who would be really good for you. So he gave us the details, all the contacts and everything, and we'll check them out on YouTube. And the English guy nudged it because he was a blank page. There was an American guy and an English guy. The English guy really was very young. He's the guy we've got now, which is Sam Coulson. Very young, blank page, didn't smoke, doesn't drink, clean living guy, great vibrato, very bluesy, and very, very eager, very willing to do it. So we chose Sam, and within 2 days, we could make the announcement that, A, we had a new guitar player, B, we would be embarking on a tour of Europe, including Sweden Rock Festival. We would have a new album called Valkyrie on Frontiers Records, who were fully behind us. And it was kind of business as usual. We hoped to hit the ground running. And so when that tour was over and Steve went his separate way, Jeff and I started writing this next album, which was to be titled Valkyrie. And it came to about 6 weeks before the end of the album, just before mixing had started. And we had a band meeting to see how things were going. And at that meeting, Carl Palmer said, well, I don't like the title Valkyrie for the album. It's too feminine. And I said, well, actually, it's the female deity that is a Valkyrie has more power than the rest of the gods put together. But I take your point. What I always say is if someone's uncomfortable with something that I've written on one of my titles, then I will do my best to accommodate that, unless I feel like it's a sticking point. I didn't feel like it was a sticking point for me because I said the next title that I'm working on is called Gravitas. And at that point, everybody in the room jumped up and down and started doing high fives and said, that's it, we've got it, we've got the title. So that's how that came about. And I said, no skin off my nose, as far as I'm concerned, the album will always be Valkyrie. Always. the strongest track on the album. It's where it all began. It's kind of, that's it for me. And it was the first track. It's the featured track. It's the video. But the actual title is Gravitas. The title track is Gravitas. So that's how that came about. And that's what working in a democracy is, you know? You know, the whole story about democracy is that when you have a sort of marginal vote, say it's 49 to 51, then you have almost half the population that don't get what they want.
Yeah.
So it's the same in a band, you know. We take a vote on everything, practically everything. I mean, now it's down to three votes, actually. We have a manager who's quite vocal about stuff. When we can't see that we're putting our foot in it commercially, he will point that out to us. So he has a pretty big say in matters. But we like to keep the band autonomous, but at the same time, internally, it's democratic. How does that work? I don't know. But it's all I can say is it's worked better now for the last, whatever it is, 8 years, eight and a bit years, than it did in the previous 35, you know. I'm doing all the talking to you.
Oh, that's fine. No, you're the one that's going to have the quotes in the paper, so it's better that you speak. But and you know, it's interesting. You speak about the last 8 years. I mean, I actually saw the second show you guys ever performed in Rochester, New York, on your very first tour. Yeah,
2006.
No, we're talking 1982. You did the first show of that 2006 tour.
The first one was at Potsdam in upstate New York.
Yep. Yep.
Very first one. And then the second one, yeah, would have been Buffalo, yeah.
Yeah. It was just, I mean, you know, there was a lot of energy and excitement at the time. It's interesting. I think when we heard the name Asia and it was on the list, nobody knew what the band was. Somebody thought that it was an African rhythm ensemble because the album wasn't out before you booked the tour. But, you know, but I digress. You know, these supergroup concepts, you got the King Crimson guy, you got the Yes guy, ELP guy, you know, Buggles guy, whatever. Do you think maybe back when you guys first came out, you were just sort of, were you shoved together? And that was maybe part of the problem with keeping it lasting as long as it did the second time around?
Yeah, certainly one of the problems our first time around was that nobody was really prepared for the success that we had. We weren't kind of shoved together. It was quite well thought out. We spent a lot of time in rehearsal. We spent a lot of time. I was fortunate. I had a huge backlog of material. I'd just done an album in Miami with Wishbone Ash, and I think they used one of my songs. And every night, when everyone had gone home, I would sit at the glorious Bösendorfer in Criteria's studio and just hammer out songs. And because I was kind of immersed in Americana, living in Miami, it all came really easily to me. And they had a distinct sort of FM, AM, kind of top 40, driving in your car kind of feel to them. I was very much influenced by what was going on around me in Miami at that time. Not the Latin part of it, but just being immersed in America. I loved it. Every night when everyone went home, which was quite early, I would sit at the piano for a few hours and just rattle off songs. God, excuse me, we've got an air show going on in the next town, and these enormous jets are using my airspace as a runway here. So that's kind of deafening noise coming through the double glazing here. We had a wealth of material, and when I met Jeff Downs, we had even more material because I started working with him, and we became a kind of a marriage made in heaven as far as rock songs were concerned. So, and that's a relationship that still exists today, which I'm very, very pleased about, obviously. When we were thrust into the spotlight, as it were, as the new supergroup, we never coined that phrase. That was something that was made up by the media. Not that I object to it, but I have to point out that it wasn't our kind of epithet. It was convenient peg to hang us on, because there's your headline straight away, isn't it? If the new band comes from nowhere, there's your headline, supergroup. Right. Because we'd all been in bands that people had heard of before. I don't think that's what killed the band in the first round. I think the amount of success that we had came as a surprise to everyone in the band and the people around it. The people in the record company didn't know what to do. They shoved us back into the studio for another album. We could have toured that first album for another 3 years, believe me. That's what a band give their right arm to do that. We could have toured that for another 3 years, but 12 months later, we were back in the studio making a follow-up, which is, it's in the same vein as Die Hard 4 should sell more than Die Hard 3. Lethal Weapon 2 should sell more than Lethal Weapon 1, because you already have an audience. It doesn't work that way with music, because I am the most devoted Joni Mitchell fan of all time ever. I worship the ground that she walks upon, and I don't have every Joni Mitchell album. I may absolutely adore one album, go out and buy it, and then miss the next one. I don't religiously go out and buy it regardless because of who it is. And I think the same thing applies to Asia's second album. People were buying the first one. They were still buying the first one when the second one came out. And we suffered really from record company pushing us back into the studio too, because I happen to think it's a great album, the second Asian record. So I think we were actually musically finding our feet by that time. But the fact is that 12 months later, the public just didn't want another one. They were still buying the first one. So even though it was successful, it was kind of regarded as a bit of a failure. I mean, most bands would have been proud to sell 3 million records, but after you just sold 10 million, it's a bit of, you know, the climb down. I just think the band was handled very badly. My alcoholism was way out of line at that point. It was blossoming. I didn't take too kindly to all this stuff. I was completely off the rails, which is another reason for us choosing Sam Coulson, by the way, is that he is a very, very clean living fellow, and we could not afford at this stage of the game to have to kind of endure another train wreck like me. So there were reasons for us choosing it, you know, because on the road it becomes very, very difficult if someone is not pulling their weight. You know, and I say that from experience, because I was the one in 1982-83, particularly 83, that had the alcohol problem, and it dragged everybody down. It was more than 50% responsible for destroying the band first time round. Because also, I think when you take out of a band, regardless of how great the players are, you take out the singer-songwriter, it kind of, you're ripping the heart and soul out of the band, aren't you, really?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that just to blow my own trumpet. It's a fact. You know, if you take Don Henley out of the Eagles or Roger Hodgson out of Supertramp, you leave a void there, because they're the ones that come up with the songs and they're the ones that sing them, you know. Anyway, so, where were we?
Well, we were up to the second album, which, you know, I agree with you.
I thought Alpha was really good. I thought the mix was atrocious. Yeah. If ever an album deserved a remix, it's Alpha. But unfortunately, we've contacted Geffen about doing that, and they can't find the tapes anywhere. So that is a non-starter. It could be remastered, but unfortunately, the balance of sound, it's too top-heavy.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's funny. I've never thought about that. But I mean, and I love the album. Don't Cry is probably one of my favorite Asia songs. And, of course, Smile Left My Eyes, you were playing that on the first tour. But you're right. It does have a really hot, high mix. I hadn't really thought about that. And in a digital era, that would be worse.
If you listen to Don't Cry, it's just all top. I mean, you don't notice it particularly on the radio, because it's so... when you listen on radio, it's usually kind of, it's got all that, the condenser on it and everything. But actually, when you listen to it on a decent stereo, there's no bass end on it at all. It's all top end. So that would be top of my priorities, to call up Mr. Wilson and get him to remix Alpha. But I don't think it's possible unless we can locate the tapes. So, but anyway, after that, Steve Howe, when I came back into the band, after their little Japanese tour, one of my stipulations was that Steve Howe would leave it. That sort of antagonism lasted for quite a while, but it was not there. I have to reiterate, I have to stress this, that it was not there when we reunited in 2006. There was no animosity between myself and Steve Howe. That hatchet had been buried a long, long time ago. In fact, when we reformed the band, 2006, with the all four original members, we had a band meeting with management and everything at a neutral hotel in London. And as fate would have it, Steve Howe and I bumped into each other in the lobby. So the scene was all set for a gunfight at the OK Corral in room 417. And the sting has already been removed from this entire situation by Steve Howe and I bumping into each other in the lobby. And just with an enormous hug, we went up to the room practically sort of hand in hand. It was amazing. Couldn't have happened better. But there was never any antagonism between myself and Steve during our last 6 years of working together. In fact, there was a mutual respect, which is actually rather lovely. I could work with Steve again, no problem at all.
Yeah, and you guys put out three amazing albums, which is, you know, ironic, because the first shot around, you did two, you know.
Yeah. We stayed together longer than the original band, way longer. And we put out three DVDs, the Blu-rays, and we also toured a lot. We toured everywhere, you know. We toured America every year. We toured Europe most years. We toured the UK three or four times. We even toured South America. We did Japan like four times. We worked a lot more because we could. And actually, I have to say, we were much better. We had a lot more choice of material, obviously, but we were actually much better as a band than we were in the original days. One of the drawbacks of being successful so quickly and on one album is that you only have 40 minutes of material as an entity. If you have to then borrow from your previous bands, it kind of takes the shine off the new band aspect, you know. So what we did was we padded out the original set with solos and bits of the second album, the bits that had been written so far. This time we didn't have to do that. This time around we have plenty of wealth of material to choose from. So in the last tour we had 6 albums to choose from. Now we've got 7.
And Sam, I mean, he brings, it's interesting because I know you guys have had a whole slew of guitarists. You know, you mentioned Steve Lukather. I mean, he was there briefly, but then you had Pat Thrall, I remember. I think Mandy Meyer at one point. But Sam seems to draw, am I correct? Am I hearing it's sort of like, Sam seems like the happy middle ground between like a Lukather and a Steve Howe. He sort of has that melodic feel of Lukather, but he's still got some of that technique of Howe.
He's actually, he's got a lovely blues feel, which I like, because it's the antipathy of Steve Howe, who is the sort of clean, technical, jazzy technician, whereas Sam is very, very bluesy, and he gets that lovely sort of big, fat tone. He can give you the big chords. He can actually do the technical stuff, but with a completely different sound. Yeah, I really enjoy it. The band, terrific on stage now. I mean, I know that Sam is almost 40 years younger than anybody else in the band. But at the same time, I have to tell you, to borrow a phrase from from football, we have a good dressing room. In fact, you know, the atmosphere in the dressing room is really, really terrific. And there's no kind of, there's no us and them thing about Sam and the rest of us. He's one of the guys, and we share the same sense of humor. The banter in the dressing room is pretty much the same as it's always been. Always, you know, with any band that I've been in, whether it be American or British, it's the same bloody thing, you know. It's got a sort of, it varies between extremely highbrow, you know, talking about opera and stuff, and just the usual gutter stuff that any band will churn out. Via Monty Python, you know, politics, anything else, religion, anything else that's going on at the time. So it's exactly the same. It's a very happy dressing room. And that actually counts for a lot, because when you're on the road, you can't afford to have a bad dressing room. It's the kiss of death.
Yeah, well, it's funny because, you know, I was thinking today before I called you, and I looked at this at Sam's age, and I thought, man, here's a kid 20-some-odd years old going on the road. I mean, the temptations, you know, the girls, the drugs, and all that stuff that you read about.
Married. So, you know, the rest of us live like monks these days, mainly because we choose to. You give a much better performance on stage if you're in fairly good shape. He fits in with that. He goes, you know, he's an early to bed, early to rise guy, and as I said, that was one of the factors why he got the gig. No, I mean, least of all his playing. He was chosen for his playing, but actually, he fit the bill as far as being a clean cut guy.
All right, well, I've got time for one more question. You know, it's funny, my editor actually asked me this, and I'm trying to remember if my memory serves me correctly, because it doesn't always, but we were talking about Asia, the concept of the supergroup, and I always remember reading, and maybe this was a media hype thing, but, you know, the reason Asia was chosen as a name was because it was A, for being early on in the record bins, and it was, you know, Asia was a big continent, so this was supposed to be the next big thing. Was that the reason that you chose the name, or is that all fictitious?
That's always been a bit of a kind of joke answer, if you like, to people who ask why we're called Asia. I think we come well after ABBA and Aerosmith anyway, but if you're looking at the racks. But it was something that our manager mentioned, Brian Lane, when we had a band meeting, and we had hundreds of names written down and suggestions. And he said, oh, nobody's used Asia. And it completely slipped past everyone. And then when I got home, I thought, whoa, actually, that's not bad. 4 letters, 4 people, you know, begins and ends with A, so it's kind of geometric. Roger Dean could have a field day with the logo. And I called him up the next day, and I said, you know, when you said Asia, I actually thought about it, and I think it's pretty good. I think we should launch that one again. And it got another airing. And at that point, people started to think, actually, yeah, it's not bad. So then, of course, we had to make up stories about why. And in every interview, there would be why you call Asia, and those other reasons will pop out. But they weren't. weren't really the reason. We didn't choose it because it was the biggest continent. It was because it sounded and looked good. Geometrically, it looks great, you know. And, of course, Roger did a fabulous job on the logo, and we still use that logo today. It was one of the things that at the end of when we delivered the album to Geffen, the president took me to one side and he said, John, he said, you know, the cover's a bit dark for us. The logo is legible, and frankly, I don't hear a single. So thank God he wasn't the guy that was marketing it.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, you destroyed my memory of my youth at where your name came from, but it's pretty cool to clear that up. And, you know, thank you very much. Did you ever see the movie, the 40-year-old version, where they referenced Asia?
Yeah, of course. I thought the placing of Heat of the Moment was absolutely spot on. I thought that was spot on. When the guy, he comes through the billboard. But all the stuff about the you're gay because you have an Asia poster or something. Well, okay, you know, we are not above looking ridiculous, you know. And actually, that film was kind of it was the beginning of quite, it was the birth of quite a lot of those movies, wasn't it, really?
Yeah.
The whole kind of pack of actors that came out of that movie went on to spectacular subsequent achievements, you know. So, yeah, I thought that we were kind of, to be associated with that movie is not a bad thing at all. I love the movie. And I love most of the movies that spawned as well. So, of course I've seen it. Yeah, I've seen it 3 or 4 times.
And I have that poster I bought on the original tour. So it's even, so do you. So, well, listen, I can't thank you enough. I'm really excited to have you come to this place called the Rapids Theater in Niagara Falls, New York.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that.
It's a beautiful venue. You're really going to enjoy it. A lot of people are excited you're coming. I can't wait to see Sam. I've been watching a lot of YouTube clips and, you know, I think he's going to be
great. He's really, really good. Yeah. Also, my girlfriend lives in Syracuse, so it's a good place for me to play.
Oh wow! And you got a manager out of Rochester, so you've got all kinds of connections up in this area.
Yeah, I think I should move to your place.
You might. And you mentioned Joe DiMaggio in the new album. I didn't know if you were a Yankees fan as well. There's a lot of New York stuff going on.
I heard someone. It's a quote from a movie somewhere. It's soft as Joe DiMaggio's glove. And I thought, oh, I've got to use that somewhere. I have no idea whether his glove was as soft as that, but it's a lovely idea.
Yeah, beautiful song. Absolutely gorgeous.
But if you're going to support the team, may as well be the Yankees, I reckon.
Well, I'm a Mets fan, but you can, you know, in New York, you can't go wrong supporting the Yankees in most of the states. Yankees win, the Mets are, you know. All right. Well, great. Well, as I said, I'm really looking forward to it.
I'll see you in the theater.
Okay. Yes, definitely. Yeah, I have some friends there, so maybe I'll have a chance to stop back and say hello.
Please do. Yep.
Okay. All right. Cool. Thank you so much, John.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.